Welcome to the Capital News. Today is Monday, August 5th, 2019. Thank you so much for joining me. Well, we had a doozy of a day in the global marketplace, didn't we, folks? Today's episode is titled Global Market Sell-Off and Currency Manipulation. As we are in the midst of an escalation in this trade war between the United States and China, we now have China allowing the yuan to devalue against the U.S. dollar and other currencies. And this is a big no-no for President Donald Trump. We talked about this yesterday because we gave our Week Ahead Outlook podcast Sunday evening. And of course, this news broke that China was going to allow the yuan to devalue a little bit. Now, they claim that they have the power and wherewithal to maintain a certain level where it doesn't become too harmful to the Chinese economy, but we will wait and see what happens. However, we do have today the United States firing back and actually calling the Chinese a currency manipulator. Now, this was something that was promised by Donald Trump during his presidential campaign in 2016. However, he has not done it, which is okay. I'm not claiming that he had to do it or by any means, but he was hesitant to do it. He put a handful of countries on the currency manipulator watch list, if you will, but he finally pulled the trigger today in regards to the Chinese yuan. This is official. This was certain paperwork was filed by Secretary Treasury Mnuchin. So we'll keep you abreast on what those updates are. I believe they have to go to the International Monetary Fund before they can proceed, or that is part of the process. So I'm going to have to do a little bit more research myself on this to see what the steps are, what is likely to transpire, what type of ruling will be rendered, I guess, by the IMF or some other international body. But it's something that is clear that this truce is over. It was short-lived, barely reached a month. Donald Trump increasing tariffs 10% on $300 billion worth of Chinese goods coming to the United States. China responds, tells their state, well, they ask, that's the word they use. We're asking, of course, that means they're telling, but they said, we're asking our state companies to halt all purchases of U.S. agricultural products. They were the trend, as we've been discussing, has already been almost to zero anyway. This is just, you know, it's kaput now. Now it's just, let's just make it zero. So that's not good. That's not good politically for Donald Trump, because he's talking all the time about how he is the jobs president. He's talking how he is out for middle-class Americans. He's looking out for middle-class Americans, that he is particularly looking out for U.S. farmers. Of course, this is not the case right now in regards to China. We've got a lot of soybeans sitting around going nowhere. We've got a lot of wheat sitting around going nowhere. That's not good. We have a lot of farmers filing for bankruptcy. We've discussed this in previous podcasts. Look, folks, farmers are the salt of the earth. We need them. They are hard workers. They are patriots across this country. I want them to succeed. They are not looking for a handout. They just want to get to work. They want to operate in a fair and free marketplace, which isn't too much to ask, but they are suffering. There's no question about it. And on one hand, you have Donald Trump saying this is the greatest economy in U.S. history. Of course, it's not, but that's what he's saying. Same time, he's saying the Chinese are the ones paying the tariffs. This is not correct. They are not sending us money to the U.S. Treasury. Importers are paying that price. They're either eating at cost, eating into their margins, or passing it on to us, the consumers, or some variation thereof. Then it makes its way into the U.S. Treasury. And you have Donald Trump saying, well, since we're taking in all these billions from China, we're just going to repay the farmers. So it's a subsidy. It's a bailout of the farming industry. The question is, where is most of that money going to? Is it going to small farmers, or is it predominantly going to corporate farmers? My guess would be it's going to the bigger corporate farmers as opposed to the smaller ones. But we'll have to wait and see what happens. But, I mean, truly, best of luck to these farmers, because they're suffering. They're also, if you look at the commodity prices for a lot of their product, they've been going down. This is probably more on the demand side of things right now, because you have this escalation growing with between the United States and China. Of course, I think it's just reality starting to kick in for a lot of these markets that, oh my goodness, we actually are in a global slowdown. This is no surprise here to us at the Capital News. We've been talking about this for months. We talk about it on a daily basis. That's the point of this program, is to highlight the economic news. That's what it's telling us. If it was telling us that everything was great and fine, I would be telling you that everything is great and fine, but it isn't. So I'm not going to paint a rosy picture just to make you feel better, because making you feel better doesn't protect your assets. It doesn't lead you to making better investment decisions, does it? In fact, it's going to lead you to make terrible investment decisions. So we have to be aware of what's going on in the marketplace. So today, because it was a doozy, we're going all around the world like we do every once in a while, but we're definitely going to do so today. The S&P lost 87 points, a decline of 3%. The Dow lost 767 points, a decrease of 2.9%. The NASDAQ lost 278%, a loss of 3.5%. The Russell 2000, the small cap index, lost 46 points, also a decline of 3%. Looking at the Dow Jones Transports, they lost 3.2%. The New York Stock Exchange gave back 2.7%. Now, I remember about 10 years ago during the Great Financial Crisis, I think one of the largest days losses point-wise for the Dow was like 777 points, something like that. At the time, I was still an undergrad. I was working as an intern with a financial advisory firm, and I just remember watching the markets. This is when I was just really starting to get into watching the markets and learning about the economy and all that stuff. And I remember my instincts on this because at the time, this was in the midst of the Great Recession, and you have talks of what's going to happen. Is the Federal Reserve going to come rescue everybody? Is the federal government going to come and rescue everybody? Are they just going to let everybody fail, collapse? What's going to happen, right? It was chaos. Nobody knew what was going to transpire. I remember my instincts because I was talking, obviously, with my boss and colleagues at the financial firm and just, you know, general conversation, you know, what should be done? How should this, you know, play out? Let them go. I mean, I'm a free market guy from the beginning, okay? I've never wavered on that. Political parties, I've moved around. Of course, if you've been following this, I'm a libertarian. But, you know, free markets, people. Free markets. That was the opportunity of a lifetime for this country to correct itself. It truly was. I am not a fan of Barack Obama. I was never a fan of Barack Obama. But he was our president, and you want the president to succeed in some way, form, or another, right? Especially for the betterment of this country. He walked into one hell of an opportunity. And I've stated this many times before on this podcast, despite the fact that I don't agree with him on virtually anything. He could have gone down as one of the best presidents ever if he'd understood what to do. Of course, he didn't understand what to do, and of course, he was bought and paid for by corporate interests in this country. So, of course, he was going to continue with the George W. Bush and company bailouts of Wall Street. And that's what he continued to do. Instead, he could have said, well, we'll see you later. You made big mistakes. Hope and change. This system's corrupt. All that stuff. It was just political slogans. I mean, I saw through it. And, of course, I mean, that's how it always is. You know, some people think, well, look, that guy's a phony. Same thing people are going to say about Donald Trump and continue to say, well, I saw right through it. I was no way I was voting for him. Okay, that's the point. Right? That's the problem. That's the problem. It's these divide and conquer tactics. But Barack Obama, he walked into an environment once in a lifetime, and he could have said, bye-bye, guys. You took on too many risks. You committed fraud, no ifs, ands, or buts about it. And you're gone. See you later. I mean, if you want to go through bankruptcy, that's fine. And if you can come out of bankruptcy stronger than before, fantastic. We'd like to see you around. But you know what? Right now, in your current state, the way you've run your business, you got to go. You got to clean house. See you later. That would have been the best thing for this country. Instead, 10 years on, with central banks the world over embarking in zero interest rate policy here in the United States, ZERP, or negative interest rate policy, NERP, in Europe, in Asia. And it may be coming to a theater near you here in the United States if this continues. Because it is not a one and done, ladies and gentlemen, with the Federal Reserve in their most recent policy meeting just last week, where they cut interest rates by 25 basis points and ended quantitative tightening. They said, well, you know, this is not the beginning of an easing cycle. That's a bunch of bull. It most definitely is, especially now that we know, according to Jerome Powell in his press conference, that a lot of this decision was made off of the back of uncertainty in regards to the U.S.-China trade war. Well, now we know there's escalation. So if that's their base point or one of their key pillars in making a decision to cut interest rates and to end quantitative tightening 2 months early because it was supposed to end in September, and we said that was the thing you had to pay attention to, well, then now you know that there's escalation. What are you going to do in September? Because remember, there's no Federal Reserve meeting in August, which is why we told you from the beginning of this month, late last month, that August is likely going to be a bumpy ride. Congress is on vacation, so don't expect any type of fiscal stimulus, and the Fed is out as well. There's no meeting. So what are the markets going to cling to, especially now that we are upping the rhetoric and the action in U.S.-China trade war? So now it seems more and more likely that the Federal Reserve is going to have to cut interest rates. I don't want this to happen, okay? I don't want the Federal Reserve to exist. You know this. The whole purpose of this program is to educate people on the Federal Reserve, how this economy works, and the Fed, abolish the federal income tax. You want to start solving problems, that's what you have to do. Look, we're in the midst of the 2020 presidential election, right? None of these ignoramuses are talking about it. The president isn't talking about it. None of the 20 lunatics are talking about it, which is going to be dwindled down here pretty soon, because I believe their next round of debates are in September. And right now, it looks like that field is going to be cut in half on the debate stage. That doesn't mean that these people are, you know, have to stop and back out. But clearly, if you're not getting TV time and debate time, it's a lot harder to raise money, get your message out there. And a lot of people are just going to say, well, look, if they're not on television, why am I going to support them? I mean, unfortunately, that's just the way it works in American politics today. But none of these people are saying end the Federal Reserve. Nobody's even talking about it. You have Donald Trump talking about them and complaining about them, which is fine. But, you know, he wants them to continue with the disease. He wants them to continue being the drug dealer for Wall Street. They throw a hissy fit. We want easy money. Give us our crack cocaine. Give us another hit of heroin. Come on. Spike the punch bowl. We want this party to keep going. And that's what the Federal Reserve does. That's the problem. The low interest rates are the problem. The fact that they're going up is part of the cure. It's not going to be easy. It's going to be bumpy. I don't want the Federal Reserve being the ones to do it. But look, this was going to happen one way or the other. Either by intervention from the Federal Reserve, increasing interest rates, or the marketplace would have done it, believe me when I tell you. Because if you have a free market system, of course, we really don't here, but in theory, if we were to have one, and you have all of this malinvestment, the way that it is going to get cleaned up is the allowing interest rates to correct. And in this case, they would have been higher. Would have popped these bubbles, all of this malinvestment would have went away, it would have liquidated. That's exactly what we need to happen. This is exactly what should have happened 10 years. But because we didn't allow it to happen, all we've done is kick the can down the road now for 10 years, even longer than 10 years, and we've created bubbles and malinvestment all over the place. All over the place. It is basically the everything bubble. It is once again in real estate, primarily in the higher end residential real estate, also in commercial real estate. It's in the stock market. It's in the bond market. It's in some commodities, although we've seen a lot of downward pressure in a lot of commodities as of late, but nevertheless, the money made its way there too. It's everywhere. It's in the auto sector. You got student loans, $1 trillion+. The money just went everywhere. So it is so insulting when they say there's no inflation. That's exactly what the Federal Reserve does. Exactly what they do. That's why inflation is always and everywhere a monetary phenomenon. It is not just price increases. That is the symptom of inflation. Inflation is an increase in the money supply. And if you looked at our video on are central banks trapped, we show you what quantitative easing looks like using the Federal Reserve's own data. So I'm not manipulating anything. That's what it is. I give you the source. You can go find it yourself. Analyze it yourself. 10 ways to Sunday. You're going to see the same exact thing. That is inflation, folks. It's here. It's in your face. It's just distributed at different places. But it's everywhere. That's exactly what the Federal Reserve is in the business of doing, creating inflation. Just because you don't see it with their little made-up numbers that the government puts out there for you and saying, oh, well, there's nothing here. I mean, come on, you're going to buy that? You go shopping? You pay rent? You want to buy a car? How's your health insurance? How's that going up? I mean, just some basic questions. Don't just listen to the people on television who just continue to repeat and repeat and repeat until you believe it. So, again, Barack Obama had the chance of a lifetime. Donald Trump, if he came in, I mean, if he said, look, I'm going to drain the swamp, that's my job. I'm not going to take ownership of this economy. It's in a bubble. I'm not going to take ownership of this stock market. It's in a bubble. Exactly what he said when he was candidate. One of the main reasons why I voted for the man. I put aside a lot of his moral and ethical shortcomings and his rhetoric because I was like, you know what? There's no way I was going to vote for Hillary Clinton. So my choices were Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump. Now, of course, I could have wrote somebody's name in. I could have voted for a third party, whatever. But those people aren't going to win, unfortunately. Okay? And I could have stayed home, which is what I might do this time. Because I voted for this man because I really thought he was going to go after the Federal Reserve from the standpoint of abolishing the Federal Reserve. Because he was calling them out when he was a candidate. He was saying, look at what they've done. They are causing this income inequality. They are causing people such as, you know, himself to have their net worth increase because they own financial assets. They own real estate. They own stocks. They own bonds, right? He's saying, but look, the middle class, Main Street America is getting screwed. They're getting squeezed. This is the wealth transfer from the lower echelons of the income bracket to the upper echelon. And we've heard this from billionaire hedge funds. Managers come out and say this too. And this is something that I say here on a daily basis as well. Because that's the truth. That's what it was. That's what it is. Stock market's in a bubble. Economy's in a bubble. Then he gets selected. Stock market takes off. And of course, he wants to take ownership of everything. Pat himself on the back. Federal Reserve increases interest rates a little bit. You get a big sell-off. It's the Federal Reserve's fault. They increased interest rates too much, too quickly. They did quantitative tightening. Never should have done it. Hurting Trump. Da-da-da-da-da. All about Trump. All about Trump. Before, it was about bubbles, assigning appropriate blame, and I thought the solution was going to be to start abolishing the Federal Reserve. Now it's calling for more of the problem. That I do not like. Oil, rocky road today, but we still have WTI trading at $55 a barrel. Brent is at $60.25 a barrel, although it was south of $60 a barrel earlier in today's session. We have gold trading at $1,470 an ounce. Again, well above that marker that I called out of $1,450 an ounce. If it can hold above that, it looks like gold might be ready for a breakout to the upside. It already has been, but that's, I think, a technical level that if it can sustain that above $1,450 an ounce, it might very well make its way closer and closer to $1,500 an ounce, and then we'll see what happens there. Silver is at $16.49 an ounce. Again, I believe both of these precious metals are undervalued, especially over the long term as we make our way through the coming downturn, whether it will be called a recession, is anybody's guess. I think it's going to be a depression. U.S. 10-year Treasury sold off big time on a yield. Yield was way down, 6.5%, now yielding 1.735%. This was a flight to safety, inverse relationship, bidding up the price of these bonds, thereby lowering the yield. So a big decrease in the yield now at 1.735%, a flight to safety, and also the markets anticipating that the Federal Reserve will, quote-unquote, come back to the rescue when they're back in town in September for another rate cut. And we'll see what happens with quantitative easing, because that's likely to pick up again too, which we talked about in our visual presentation, our video, are central banks trapped? Please take the time to watch that video on thecapitalnews.com or on our YouTube channel, The Capital News. The VIX, the volatility index, shot up 39, about four, almost 40% today, and is now at $24.59. So quite the swings in the markets over the past couple of days. These continue. Let's take a trip around the world, shall we? The British markets were down 2.7%. The Germans lost 2%. The French were down 2.5%. We have the Spanish down 2%, and the Russians were down another percent as well. Now, of course, now we do these podcasts in the evening, so we have some live trading going on. The Japanese markets are down 1.33%. The Chinese markets are down another 2.5%. This is all, again, off the back of all of this currency manipulation and increasing in the escalation of the U.S.-China trade war. So we expect this to be taking place. No surprise there. The other one that we've been talking about, too, as a forward-looking indicator, leading indicator, is the South Korean market, which is also down another 0.33% as we speak. Now, it is trading at 1,940 points, well below that 2,000 level that we think is a technical level. We've had a couple bottoms there in the recent history, hitting that 2,000 level, give or take a few points, sort of finding support and then bouncing back from that. We've broken through that support, and we are at lows. Now, the other interesting thing that I was looking at earlier today, because I was, again, looking at copper prices as another leading indicator, and that graph is amazingly similar to the South Korean stock market. So I think both of those can be deemed leading indicators, and we will continue to monitor that very closely. We have the Hong Kong markets open as well. They are down another 300 points, down 1.2% as we speak. Again, this is intraday. Anything could change. You can have people trying to buy the dips. These markets could end up in the positive territory before the day is through. Anything is possible, because that's what we've been seeing, right? You know, recently, you got these big sell-offs. You have people coming in to buy the dips, and you have all of these mini V-shaped recoveries. But we will see how the market sentiment is, because there's still a lot of uncertainty out there. To the land down under, we have the Australian market down another 2% as well, and the New Zealand market is down 1.8%. So that's the global stock markets. What will happen tomorrow here in Europe or in the United States? Probably another little bit of a sell-off, I would have to imagine. Probably not as big as what we witnessed today, but it's anybody's guess. I really don't like to do the day-to-day stuff as far as predicting what's going to happen. I'm not a day trader. I think that's a fool's errand, but, you know, you have momentum here. But you could have a buy-the-dip moment. You never know, but it's worth paying attention to and being vigilant. A couple things on the political front. We have some stories coming out. The president, Donald Trump, signed an executive order regarding Venezuela, so we are upping the pressure on Venezuela. I know sometimes this is front burner story every once in a while here that we discuss at the Capitol News, but right now the president signed an executive order applying additional pressure to the Maduro regime, restricting a lot of sales of their assets. So this is quote-unquote maximum pressure. Again, this was on the back burner for a while. Did the president and company, did they get tired of the story of trying to overtly overthrow the Maduro regime? And they say, you know, we got other fish to fry. We're not really worried about it. We tried. We kind of failed. Let's move on to other things. Let's move on to Iran. Let's move on to Rocket Man. Let's move on to China. Let's do those things. Well, apparently it's coming back. So we're going to have to monitor this situation as well. Unfortunately, the United States is meddling in another country. We spent 2 years, if you're a Republican, you know, just saying, what are these Democrats doing? What's Bob Mueller doing? Why are we investigating the president? What's this interference nonsense? But apparently it's okay for us to do it. Russia can't do it. China can't mess with us, but we can mess with everybody else. To me, that's just ridiculous. It's ridiculous, and it's part of the problem that we face in this country. It's why you have the military-industrial complex alive and well. So much for draining the swamp, right? Military-industrial complex is alive and well. We have South Korea claiming that the North Koreans, Rocket Man, fired two more missiles. So that is seeming to escalate as well. Now, you had Donald Trump come out recently because Rocket Man fired a couple other rockets a couple weeks ago as well, saying, don't worry about it. It's no big deal. It's not in violation of our agreement. It's not in violation of our gentleman's agreement. Chairman Kim wouldn't want to disappoint me. We have a good friendship here, beautiful letters. I stepped into North Korea, you know, all these historic things. He's not going to betray me. I hope he doesn't. I mean, you guys follow this podcast, you know this podcast is about peace and prosperity. I want Donald Trump to make peace with Rocket Man. I really do. It's better for everybody. So hopefully this isn't, you know, sort of a finger in the eye here to Donald Trump. that he can do what he wants. Of course, this could be some political grandstanding also by the Chinese working behind Kim Jong-un, flexing their muscles through Kim Jong-un. Who knows? Who knows? But a lot of things to pay attention to. We also, again, have the escalation taking place between India and Pakistan with in regards to the Kashmir region. So there's a lot of stuff going on. Anything, there's a lot of dry powder all over the place, and there's a lot of lunatics wandering around with matches. So we got to be careful. You got to stay diversified. That's why we talk about that all the time. You have to stay diversified. I mean, if you got a long time horizon, stay invested. If you understand how to short the market and you have the stomach for it, be prudent, pick your spots, don't get greedy, you know, but stay invested long term. You build cash, because if you do have a long term horizon, and what I think is going to happens, you're going to have the sell of a lifetime, the opportunity of a lifetime to buy companies that can survive this downturn. Those are going to be the best of the best. And I mean, you're going to want to buy them with both fists if you can. So be diversified. Please. So lastly, to wrap up this podcast, I just want to say that there's probably going to continue to be further escalation between the United States and China. Now, we're going to have to see how China retaliates to being called a currency manipulator. Now, we all are currency manipulators. The Federal Reserve manipulates our currency. It devalues the U.S. dollar on a daily basis. It tells us that's what it's going to do. And that's what inflation targeting is. It says, well, it's 2%. We're hoping for 2% inflation. Why? Wouldn't 0% be more stable? Isn't that your dual mandate? Full employment and price stability? Isn't 0 more stable than 2%? So, I mean, I thought these people were supposed to be economists, finance majors, economics majors, math majors. Isn't 0 more stable than 2? So where does this come from? And that is 2% theft. Stealing 2%, at least 2% of the purchasing power of our dollar. Now, who is that benefiting? It's not benefiting the average American, is it? No, it's part of the wealth transfer. That's why you have such income inequality the world over. And that's likely to continue until you have this major pullback. And then you're going to see really who knows what they're doing. But there's probably going to be escalation. Remember, it was Donald Trump saying, we're in no hurry to make a deal. There's no new deadline. We're in no hurry. Then, last week, boom. President Xi's taking too long and he's not living up to his deal. 10% on $300 billion worth of goods. China says, all right, you want to play hardball? We can play hardball. We're going to halt all U.S. agricultural imports from the United States. And now we're going to devalue our currency. Those are two things that are very politically significant. Those are basically direct attacks on President Donald Trump, because they're targeting agriculture, they're targeting farmers, big Trump supporters, right? And they're targeting their currency, because Donald Trump is always coming out and saying, well, you're a currency manipulator, but never pushing the button saying you are officially. Well, he has. So I have to applaud the president. Again, if you're going to threaten to break somebody's legs, you got to do it if they cross the line. That's what the president's doing here. However, it's going to have negative ripple effects in global markets, stocks, bonds, currencies, you name it. So we're going to have to pay attention to this, because it's very interesting. These are fascinating times. Is the president willing to sacrifice his beloved stock market to do enough damage to China to get them to a table to really sign a deal? Very interesting, isn't it? Because, like we always say, these markets are so interconnected, it's not even funny. So if this was to actually hurt the Chinese economy even further than what it already is suffering from, and that really puts a dent in their economy, it's going to have ripple effects. It's going to have ripple effects. So that's why it was such, really, a foolish move for the president to take ownership of the stock market and the economy. I'm here to drain the swamp. I'm here to do XYZ, structural changes. The boat's been going in the wrong direction for generations. I'm going to turn it around. And what happens, happens. Because we got to get a little dirty before we can clean it up. If he came in and said that, he could have gotten away with pretty much anything. But no. He was either ill-advised or his ego got the best of him. And he wants to pat himself on the back for an economy he says is great, which it isn't. And a stock market, which is in a bubble. And, you know, we just did another video. Please check that out on thecapitalnews.com or, again, our YouTube channel, The Capital News. And we talked about U.S. unemployment and has that bottomed out, graphically speaking. Otherwise, has employment peaked? And what does that mean? Does that give us predictive characteristics? Does that give us insight as to when a recession is likely to take place? And we think that it does point in a direction. So check that out for sure. And we're going to have more videos up there with other important data points that will put a more concrete picture, if you will, as to the timing of when a recession is likely to take place. That is to say, when this really market history expansion that we are in, when that peaks out. So stay tuned for more videos. I'm going to wrap this podcast up here. It's been a pleasure having you. As always, please like, share, subscribe, get the word out. Stay diversified, stay vigilant, and stay with the Capital News. I am Alex Kritis. Godspeed.